Hey everyone, welcome back to Huron County Author Talk, a podcast where we talk to many talented local authors about a variety of topics within the world of writing. I'm your host, Hamilton Baker of the Huron County Library, and I'm excited to bring you another episode in Season 2. If you're a writer, a reader, or someone who likes to hear authors talk about their craft, how they publish their books, different marketing strategies they employ, and much more, then this show is for you. In this episode, Leonard Mokos, Barry Broman, Haley Linfield, Rick Hundy, and David Yates joined me at the Goderich Library for a roundtable discussion. This time around, the group talks about characters in fiction, including what makes a good character, how to create interesting and distinct characters, and how to draw inspiration for characters from people in your life. In addition, they talk about how they achieve natural-sounding dialogue in their writing. Enjoy.
Multi-dimensional characters are far more interesting than like people who I thought were villains. Like they're far more complex than I kind of like those people. One of the guys, just to do a local history thing, one of my favorite guys is John Longworth of the Canada Company. He was an incredibly ambivalent guy. He was convicted of bigamy. But on the other hand, he came to Canada. It's a really interesting story, but he's called the somewhat notorious. And that's a perfect term for him, the somewhat notorious, because he was married. Well, he was in the Peninsular War, came to Canada with the Canada Company. He left his first wife behind, but she heard how well he was doing with the Canada Company and showed up. Well, he'd taken up with what they said at the time was a barmaid, but she was a common prostitute. But actually, he wouldn't leave the prostitute. He's going back and forth, but at the end of the day, and he had the best set of dueling pistols in the Huron Tract. And there was one guy that called him out, Daniel Lazarus called him out, wrote a letter and put it on the Canada Company door calling him a coward. And that was the last thing you'd call. The 6'3" veteran of the Peninsular Wars was a coward. So he called him out to a duel, and they met on the river flats here. And Daniel Lazarus was a very bookish kind of guy. He was like the clerk of the peace, and he was literally shaking, and his gun misfired. And Longworth fired the shot in the air, and he said, "I cannot make the father of so many children an orphan, And actually, honor was on his side, and he stuck with the barmaid. And he was pretty loyal. He was pretty loyal with the barmaid. He was 90 when he died. He was such a complex person, like he was capable of all this nobility and integrity. And at one time, he actually even ran. For MP, and John Strawn's son, who ran in this area against him, wouldn't sit on the same platform because he wasn't a gentleman.
The root of the character, though, is that conflict of character. Everything good in us always has that counterbalance of maybe I should do this, a little, sometimes you slip.
Those type of people, I think, like the heroes that are partly villains, I think are far more interesting. Than those one-dimensional, like you're reading. And that's part of the problem with history today. The guy has to be either a plaster saint, or he's got to be totally evil.
Yeah, she's so you don't want that kind of one-dimensional, John is good, Bob is bad.
Yeah. Characters, like I love reading about characters that are flawed heroes or noble villains.
Contradictory in some way.
Mm-hmm. This may not be all that same on topic, but I've been researching ancestries on my wife's side, and it turns out one of her ancestors fought the Revolutionary War. He's a Hessian mercenary. He ended up captured by both sides. He's captured on one side, and he was mercenary, and then he was captured. So that would have been captured by the Americans, and then he was captured later by the British on a matter of mistaken identity or something or other. Later, he turns into a guard, a guide rather, and he's guiding this family through the wilderness, falls in love with the daughters of the families. And because of his background, the father didn't want to have anything to do with his daughter, and he decided that he wouldn't be a guide anymore.
That's a great story.
Yeah, that's a character, right?
That's
a great story.
That's a great story.
You can see character right off of that.
Are you going to write that?
I've written it up as a story.
It's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Dave, having a lot of background in writing nonfiction, and you hear all this discussion about fiction, and didn't you want to make that leap? Have you learned anything?
Yeah, I really want to go to fiction because, in a lot of ways, it kind of, writing nonfiction is great and it's fun, but you can't kind of, you kind of want to drift off in other areas, but you can't.
I've been to your house, though, mate, and you've got tons and tons and tons of books. How many of them are fiction? You need to switch your reading.
Yeah, I know what I did. That's right. I think you're right. But I really want to switch to fiction because, like I said, when you're writing nonfiction, you want to go down alleys, but you're not permitted to do that because people, especially people that are real purists, they'll say, well, that's not right.
But you had that character you just told us all about. Right?
Yeah, and that would be somebody I think would be a great play. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, just call it mm-hmm. Longworth with an exclamation mark because he has so many things going on. And I can go on and on about little things that he did or was suspected of doing, probably true. But on the other hand, when the chips were down, he was somebody that was reliable, and if he was loyal to some people, maybe not his first wife. He was breaking rocks for 60 days down in the London Middlesex jail. Didn't seem to hurt his political career or his career with the Canada Company because they hired him, right? Thomas Mercer Jones brought him right back, and he led all these during the rebellion. He got the Irish Orange and the Green Irish to support the colonial government.
How would you describe the psychology? What kind of mind did he have? What kind of personality?
Well, he didn't. He wasn't educated. The Lazar sisters kind of make fun of his coarse Irish accent. He wasn't, but he was shrewd, really, really shrewd. And at the end, like I said, at the end of the day, and they have a beautiful description of him, though, in 1837 when they're assembling the militia on the square and he shows up in his red. Like, he must have been pretty good looking at 6'3" and kind of, he's pretty big for his age. And they decide, like, they describe him and saying he looked magnificent and neither patriot or rebel. Or loyalist or rebel would dare touch a hair on his head, sort of thing. And I don't know. He was able to manipulate every situation. Like, I mean, not manipulate, but he was able. But when the chips were down, like I said,
are you gleaning all this through newspaper articles?
Newspaper articles, letters, like stuff. The court record is pretty clear. Books about what his bigamy conviction. She ended up going back, and at that time. It was not like there was a lot of pressure on him to, because that's what you did. He went back to your, like, he did get divorced. Well, he never did divorce, as far as I know.
Did he marry the barmaid?
Yeah. Okay. So, like, that's why they
That's why it's bigamy.
Yeah, because
it's not illegal to just cheat on your wife.
Right. No, and in fact, Thomas Mercer Jones, his mistress, lived.
Probably not at that time, not if you were a man.
Yeah, I mean, they that was okay, but he married this woman. Her name.
So you have a big file on this. Is it all in your head?
No, I've got files and all this stuff, but Longworth, I think, would be a fascinating character to do, like a play, say. Or the other one, like they were going to do a play in 2016, they were going to do a play on the 161st Battalion going to war, and I thought that would have implied they were going to do it. I thought it'd be a spectacular play. And not to diminish anything they do at Blythe, but they clearly didn't have a feel for World War One, and that was part of that World War. Remember, we had the poppies on the square, and we had that we had that whole commemoration event that weekend. And they were going to cap it off with a play for the season, but the feet, like I said, they fell into that 21st century pitfall of trying to make this a 21st century play about 1916. And you can't. But I want to learn how to do a play, like write dialogue or something like that.
Start reading.
Because whenever I try.
Eugene O'Neill and people like that.
Yeah, because whenever I try, I get bogged down. You got to kind of streamline it so it's conversational. Mm. And conversation is kind of a lot harder to write, I think, than just writing historical. But, I mean, that's why I'm kind of like here. I want to hear about what other people writing fiction do.
Well, I think this line of questioning, I really liked your line of questioning. You started asking about Lowell, what motivates him, what, you know, the line. It sounded like you had a list in your head of exactly what you were going to ask next. Like, or it seemed like they fit all together nicely.
Which are the right questions to ask? Why?
No, what? Why does he do all
why?
This?
Why? Always does he do these why? Things?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what's his motivation? Like, mm-hmm. is it what principle? Like, because he does seem to have principles. Because
if you want to, if you want to turn it into some kind of story, you need to, and go in different directions, you need to know the answers to these whys.
Yeah.
Huron County Author Talk has their first live event coming up this October. Attend our upcoming live event and meet some of the local authors from Huron County Author Talk, taking place Wednesday, October 18th at the Huron County Museum from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock p.m. Visit HuronCountyMuseum.ca for more details.
Is that how you work?
I don't know.
Well, when you do your characters, how do you, like, what do you do?
I think the main characters are based on a combination of real people, and it depends on the character. I'm trying to think of like an example, but
when you mentioned real people, I think of this was years ago. I whacked my head. I was down at the concussion place down in London, the Fowler Kennedy Clinic, and the doctor there was very timid, and just his mannerisms and the way he talked. Well, that's a character. Like, he's totally. I even used his name in my book.
Was he a good doctor?
Well, he was great. But just the way he approached things and the questions, it was very unique. Like, you come across people that's a character that click with you, kind of thing. And maybe that's, like you say, a combination of people you know.
It's good to
be an eavesdropper.
Mm-hmm.
A combination of people you know, and maybe sometimes like a combination of how you think people should be, or how you think people should, depending on the person, or depending on what the character
is. You should be able to park a car between each character, in my opinion. So they aren't all sort of just mishmashes of you, that they are specific, and you can hear them differently.
I find writing my first draft is like, okay, these are the same people.
Yeah,
these two characters. Have you had that?
Yeah. I think that's why part of the reason this book's taking 6 years, because coming out of the first draft, all my characters were just like very. It's been 6 years trying to get it more like you're saying characters that are their own.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was what Rick said is having a biography for at least your primary characters. Before you even start.
Which I did actually do with my three. I have three main characters.
And they'll be your strongest character.
And I did that ahead. I did pick that up somewhere along the line before I started, so that was good.
Cool.
But the other characters that were the ones that needed sorting out.
It's a difficult thing, however. Even if you separate them, maybe this is me, but I have a tendency to fall into a pattern. So, right now, manuscript where most everything except for my short stories and everything, all my histories are in first person. Well, this latest one I'm working on, I've got a character who is, I've introduced him, he's also in first person, but I introduce him by way of letters to his sister. And so I have three people who read my stuff after I think I've got a good draft. And one of them in particular said, he sounds like your protagonist. So the guy should be quite different from the protagonist, completely different from the protagonist. I fell into the pattern of writing, much the way my protagonist would say things. So, and that was an excellent thing, so I'm really having a good time now getting it right. But if he had said that, the other two are going to pick up on the other two readers. So, yeah, it does help to have good character biographies, but then you gotta follow through too.
Yeah, and I think it's not just necessarily catalog of events, so born here. And
no,
so,
no.
But right. Those flavors and sure. Textures, like all just gripping a pen, or just some mannerism that is that guy versus you know that person.
Yeah.
Okay, like that method. Acting or something like that.
Something along those lines. But yeah, this should be distinct. At least your primary people, even if you don't say who the speaker is, you should hear it.
Right, David, we talked about that last one. Even if you don't see who says it, you should know who said it. Like it doesn't say said.
If they all sound like you, it's garbage.
Right.
It's a start again. Yeah.
That was my pet peeve when I was reading Harry Potter books to my kids. Because, I don't know, she would always, it seemed like she always started a paragraph with a quotation rather than like a blocking or something. So it was always started with words. And so there'd be three or four people in the scene and I would be reading several lines thinking that somebody said it. And then you get to the end and you realize, oh, that was said by that person. And then I feel like I have to go back and reread it again.
Yeah. Is it any good? I've never actually read it.
They're all the same. I mean, they're good. Like, the details are good, but...
I mean, they get the kids to read. That's great.
Yeah.
Are they actually good?
My kids, I never read them.
We read three. I read three of them, like, out loud to them, and that's all.
I read them... Like, I was basically Harry Potter's age when they were coming out, so I read them as a kid and thought they were great. And I went back to read the first one, just the first few pages, a couple years ago.
I didn't enjoy it
very good, actually.
The details of...
Yeah. But I didn't go all the way. Maybe it was just the first
Maybe you need to be the audience, right. Age group, to get the vibe.
Yeah, like I'm now reading as an adult.
I didn't love them so myself.
Did you do the characters in different voices?
Well, it's hard to tell who's saying. Like, who, you don't know, right? Right? Like, yeah.
I love this one.
Are you a good mom?
We get in the car, and my son loves to read aloud. And he'll do the characters. So we'll pick a book, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, or this last one. He's really now into Discworld. What's his name?
Terry Pratchett.
Pratchett. And so he read that for the hour and a half drive down to the far end of Kitchener. And very cleverly written. I've never read any of his work.
He read it out loud.
He reads aloud, and then he does different voices for the different characters. And then he's 20. And then my daughter on the way back, she said she wasn't enjoying the book at all, so she had her own book, and she started reading it, and she did the voices. And
she was reading hers out loud too.
Yeah, she's reading hers out loud. So we took a turn. She got to read hers on the way back, and using the different voices, and it's fun. And then you get a real feel for the character, and this idea. It's funny because that's the most bizarre place I ever got an idea for a character was the sound of a song I remember hearing all the time as a kid, and what would that character be like, and the way they talked in the song.
You said something good there, though, which is your dialogue. If you read it out loud, and you can't read it
in different voices
in a smooth way, it's not right. You know, it's got to sound right. So it looks okay on the page. If you say it out loud, it sounds right. But it looks good on the page when you say it out loud. It sounds clunky. It's clunky.
Yeah, to your point about dialogue and making it natural and not getting bogged down in details, in Rail Ties, the girls walking around and the chains, and someone suggested, oh, those chains are from the storm, the great storm. Maybe you should mention that. But this is a 18-year-old girl, and she doesn't give a crap about that, right? So that's not something that she's going to be...
That's right.
It isn't natural for her to talk about that, even if you want to put that interesting detail in. It has to fit with the character.
Making it unnatural. And that's what I'd really like to do, is be able to write natural dialogue and pack as much meaning into as few words as possible.
Well, there's a difference between meaning and details, too.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, an implied meaning. And like my son says, because... he'll read some of my writing. It's like, Dad, you're saying too much. You're not leaving enough to...
And you got to get body language in too, right?
Yeah, you're saying, people are saying too much.
Without saying things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Body language, circumstance.
A lot of inference.
Inference, and that things that, yeah, things are going on.
And good dialogue isn't always realistic, because realistic dialogue is pretty boring.
Sometimes,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the way people talk, it can sometimes, you got to be careful, but I find myself often eliminating dialogue.
Kind of too real.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Huron County Author Talk with your host, Hamilton Baker. If you'd like to learn more about the authors or to purchase one of their books, you can visit their websites. For more information about the podcast, you can visit the library's website at huroncountylibrary.ca. Stay tuned for our next episode that we'll release in 2 weeks. The music on this program is Echo by Alan McKellis. Thanks for listening.